Good morning and welcome to another episode of Radio Wild. Today is the first Monday of July, which means we are here hosting the show for you. It's July 6, 2015, and I'm your host for today, Alan Lacey. We've had a lot of great and exciting guests on our show over the last 6 months, and it's been a real privilege to interview them and learn more about what is taking place across the landscape with regards to wildlife, nature, and human progress. Last month, we began a new series in our Radio Wild program that is addressing some of the great predator debates issues that you will find in our upcoming film, The Great Predator Debate, A Nation's Dilemma. If you haven't checked out our trailer or the promo, you need to, so head over to our Facebook page and watch it right now before we get any further in the show. Yes, you can hit the pause and come back. Just go to www.facebook.com/wolfcenter and click on the video to watch it. Okay, now hit pause. And you're back. Glad you didn't forget us. We have a rather intriguing interview lined up for you today. But first, let us get a word in from our sponsors. Radio Wild is brought to you in part by Montana Grizzly Encounter. Montana Grizzly Encounter, a grizzly bear rescue and education sanctuary in Bozeman, Montana. Founded in 2004 by Casey Anderson and his pet grizzly, Brutus, it provides a spacious and natural home for rescued grizzlies. At the same time, it provides a place where the public can come and learn about grizzly bears as they watch the majestic animals up close in a beautiful mountain setting. All of their bears were born in unfortunate captive situations and could never be released into the wild. The bears have been rescued from often inhumane captive situations all over the U.S. They give the bears the best possible life there at the sanctuary. They give people an opportunity to see and understand this awesome creature safely, up close, with no bars or cages to obstruct the view. The Grizzly Encounter is open to school groups free of charge, and each year thousands of children learn about grizzly bear safety and conservation. In this way, Brutus and the Grizzly Encounter are doing their best to help ensure that there will be wild bears in our forests for generations to come. Okay, well today we are going to do things just a little bit different. Over the past several months, we have been interviewing our lineup for our Great Predator Debate series, and have been poring over the many interviews, which are full of great information and answers to some of today's most challenging questions related to wildlife, nature, and the human element. Last month, we heard from Casey Anderson, host and TV personality for National Geographic. So, today, we're going to have some fun. I have been asked to interview my own interview, so we're going to have some fun with it, like I said. So, anyways, to begin, first off, Alan, can you let us know the correct spelling of your name?
Sure, it's Alan, A-L-A-N, okay. And Lacey, L-A-C-Y.
Awesome. I'm glad we got that one done and out of the way. But it does bring up a good point, though, and that is what one person spells one way, another spells a different way, yet they both sound the same. It's the same with wildlife, and when one of the issues we face today is the fact that wildlife live amongst those who live in the cities, and that's a fact, but for some it seems to be an issue. In essence, you know, it sounds the same. The wildlife are in the city is to be there for good, but people see it from two different perspectives and look at it from two different ways. So how has human development affected wildlife in today's world?
The human development has affected wildlife in a lot of different ways. Basically, we've kind of encroached upon their habitat. And so now they are basically out there trying to make a living, trying to be, you know, like wildlife basically is. And, you know, we as human beings are living in their habitat. And so trying to figure out a way to coexist with them has always been a challenge. So that's one of the biggest issues. So wildlife are just trying to reclaim, trying to be a wildlife. And it's just a challenging thing for them, challenging thing for us.
Indeed it is. You always hear about issues surrounding people who are on a walk in their city park and they get terrified seeing a coyote who just as equally terrified running in the opposite direction, or bears who are eating out of bird feeders in people's backyards, etc. So we hear a lot of news reports about cougars and bears, etc., getting shot in order to protect the safety of people. So are wild animals invading our cities, so to speak?
Well, you know, to be honest, there's wildlife for all around us. we'd be amazed to see how many numbers of probably cougars do live here in the city. Coyotes, there's thousands of coyotes that live in all kinds of cities all across America. Same with cougars. Bears live on the outskirts. And when you have areas of a lot of wilderness that butt right up against the city, you're going to have those animals coming inside the city limits. But the reason that they are, I guess people are seeing them more often, more it's appearing as if they're more often, is, you know, they get news coverage. And when news coverage comes out, people see it, then all of a sudden it's like that pair of threes. You start seeing it all the time. So that's one of the reasons I think that people are looking at wildlife as, you know, invading the cities, when it's actually, they've always been there all along. It's just now some with some coverage of news, then you're starting to see it like that.
That's a good point. Wildlife has been here all along, yet in fact, just tonight, a family of raccoons visited my porch, checking out all of the plants in our garden. And we live alongside a river, and it's a really easy place for wildlife to kind of transition along these corridors. But we know people, we all live alongside wildlife every day. People all over the city live alongside wildlife, even large predators like mountain lions and cougars, if you will. So do you think that it's possible that there could be a harmony between humans and wildlife, or that humans and predators can exist?
There can certainly be harmony between humans and predators. We've lived alongside predators for thousands and thousands of years, and we're still in existence today, and predators are still in existence today. So one hasn't killed the other off. So it's definitely possible. I think one of the biggest challenges is how we perceive predators in our own mind. There's a lot of common myths or misunderstanding about a lot of predators, such as, you know, wolves or bears, cougars, that they're dangerous. But in all actuality, the chances of being attacked by a cougar or a grizzly bear or a wolf are extremely, extremely low. You have a higher probability of actually getting struck by lightning than being attacked by some of these animals. So it's just all about our perception and how we view these animals. And if we can learn how to understand these animals the way they truly are, then I believe, you know, the coexistence is definitely capable. Wolves and bears and cougars are going to do what they do. It's us that has to be able to understand them to be able to live alongside them.
Do you think it's possible for either wild animals or us as human beings to adapt to one another in a way that would promote this harmony?
Wildlife, cougars, wolves or bears, they're all part of the circle of life. They work based off of instinct. For wolves, for example, when they're hunting, that's their natural instinct, is to chase down an elk and wear it down and eventually bring it down to feed. And that's the way they work. And us as human beings, we have the greater knowledge and the greater ability to adjust to learning how to cope with these animals. Wolves are just always going to be wolves. We have the ability to change and actually learn how to live with them. That's one of the gifts of our brain, is being of much higher development and learn, and the capacity of our brain to understand and to live and to just think and understand and make decisions one way or the other, gives us an extremely great advantage and an opportunity to make life much more cohabitable for both man and for beast.
You brought up a great point, and that being a place where both man and beast can cohabitate on this planet. What do you think would happen if predators were removed from the equation here on Earth?
Predators are in a very important and integral role in the society, in our planet, in maintaining the health of ecosystems and maintaining the health of the entire environment itself, and quite frankly, our existence on Earth. If we were to remove predators from this planet, you would see a humongous imbalance in nature, which would create kind of a domino effect of things going out of whack and eventually things going extinct. Too many plants, too many animals that eat those plants, it would just go way out of whack, and eventually it would come in and affect us in a very big way.
How so? Could you perhaps elaborate a little more on the subject of predators being removed from the landscape?
Well, one of the things when you remove a predator from the landscape is you're directly affecting the relationship between that predator and that prey species. For example, one of the most common and understood phenomenons that occur when that happens is in Yellowstone National Park. You see, when wolves are removed from the landscape via the extermination campaigns, Yellowstone's ecosystem went out of balance, and all the elk and deer herds grew in number to a point where they were decimating all of the vegetation along the stream beds and damaging the stream beds themselves. And when you brought wolves back into Yellowstone, the scientists started seeing a change and a difference. A lot of the vegetation along the stream bed started regenerating and growing back up into the healthy willows and aspen poplar trees, which provided suitable habitat for a lot of songbirds and food sources for beaver. And when the beaver returned, they started creating their little micro ecosystems within the river streams. And it raises the water table, which then increases more aquatic life. So there's this huge cascading effect that takes place when you allow an ecosystem to remain in a state that it was intended to be. When you remove predators, you see that cascading effect go in the opposite and reverse direction, which is detrimental to the health of the environment, which we as human beings have the ability to make sure that doesn't happen by properly managing our wildlife in ways that make it so that our environments are sustainable, are healthy, and are viable to sustain a population of predator, prey, and ultimately us.
Yeah, the Yellowstone example has been a great way of depicting what can take place in the absence of just one single predator. It's really hard to think about what an ecosystem might look like with all predators removed from the landscape. It appears, however, that this might end up being the case if we don't prevent it from happening. Almost every species of cat is either endangered or threatened, and the 6 of 8 bear species on this planet are threatened with the potential of extinction. Thousands of other countless species are endangered or threatened, and it seems very dire when you consider the state of everything that's going on in this world. That being said, is there a way in which we can create a place for wildlife to live?
So one of the questions that we have today is, you know, what are we doing on Earth to create a place for wildlife to live? We have a lot of species that are endangered or threatened or on the verge of going extinct. In fact, several species over the last several years have actually been considered potentially and very likely extinct, such as the Western Black Rhino. That's such a tragedy because we are here on this planet. It is our turn here on Earth to take care of the planet in a way that allows us to be able to live in the future. And if we do not have the respect or the understanding or the education to be able to live with these animals and believe that we can take whatever we want and just have this totalitarian view on wildlife, then there really is no future for us. So one of the things that we as human beings have the ability to do is stewardship. It's kind of like a trust fund, essentially. You know, we have this pool of wildlife, this pool of nature and environment that's out there. And right now, we have the ability to make sure that that stays preserved for generations to come. And if we overabuse this trust fund of wildlife, of nature, then there's going to be nothing left for our generation, for our children or our grandchildren to be able to enjoy and to be able to go out in nature and actually see it the way it is today.
You know, that's a great way to put it. I couldn't have said it better myself. Well, I just did, I suppose. But no, this is really a great point. We should definitely treat our planet, nature, wildlife, all included, as a trust fund of sorts. We all have a responsibility to ensure a future for tomorrow's wildlife so our grandchildren's kids can enjoy it too. But some of the issues are that a lot of people don't view it this way. It seems to be a rather controversial subject when it comes to conservation or protecting endangered species, wetlands, and other various ecologically important issues. It has become a polarizing topic that dominates political arenas and can even certainly make for an uncomfortable situation at the dinner table come Thanksgiving time. Why do you think this is such a polarizing topic?
There's a tremendous amount of polarization right now between both sides of the argument of, you know, whether predators should be on the landscape or whether they should be removed off the landscape. And I think that a lot of that stems from a couple of things. One is that this argument's been going on for quite a long time. When the Endangered Species Act was enacted in 1973, you have a lot of advocates promoting the preservation of a lot of predator species, and then a lot of people that were affected by putting predators on the landscape again that may not have already been there or that were originally removed from the landscape to begin with. So there's this conflict, there's this clash that occurs from there, and it's been perpetuating itself for, you know, a couple decades now, and it's just starting to root itself deep, and the media likes a good story, so they're going to draw up the aggression, they're going to draw up the clash between it to have a good story, and it furthers the distance between the two groups. And it's really quite sad, because I think there's a lot of common ground that can be reached to bring these two groups together. I think that when you sit down one-on-one with a person from either side, they're good people. They you can have a conversation one-on-one, and you can have a fantastic time. I've met with several ranchers, and you can sit down, it feels like a family reunion, and I've met with several advocates on the wolf side of things, and the same thing, they're wonderful people. And I think at some point we just need to put our differences aside and look at, we're just people here on this planet. We have extreme passions on one side or the other, but if we could look past that and look at the person as an individual and then look at what's important for our future, I think we can come to a common ground and a common understanding and eventually eliminate these conflicts. But it's going to take a lot of work, and I think it's going to take many, many years before we ever have any kind of groundbreaking, earth-shattering movement towards a peaceful way to live between each other.
Are there any snags or potential bumps in the road that could prevent this from happening?
I think as long as you have one side unwilling to compromise, you're never going to have a common ground. I think both sides have to be willing to compromise in order for there to be a common ground that can be reached. And I think it's possible. I see it as something that will happen. I hope to see it within my lifetime. It's just unfortunate that both sides are so rooted in their viewpoints and standpoints that if there's any movement towards the middle ground, it's very, very little. It's only maybe, a half step forward, and most of the time it's a couple steps back.
That's really unfortunate, honestly. I mean, it would make all the sense in the world to just sit down and make something work. It would be best for them, for wildlife, for the planet, or for managing the world, the whole issue itself. I find that sometimes management has their hands tied with some of these issues that come up, especially with how management of wildlife is conducted. Most wildlife management policies allow for hunting as a method for population control, and there has been much heated debate regarding wolves recently on this topic. Are we doing a good job of managing our wolves effectively?
One of the ways that we're managing wildlife right now, specifically wolves, is through hunting. And in several states across the nation, hunting is allowed on wolves. And for wolves particularly, hunting is an interesting way of managing the species. And I think that is probably not the most scientific way to do it. There's a lot of research that points that when you hunt and you remove an alpha male or an alpha female from a pack, and you disrupt the breeding pair, basically, you are essentially allowing that entire pack to disband and become, several different types of, or several different breeding pairs, which in turn creates more pups the next year, and now you have more wolves on your hands. So by hunting them down that way, you're almost increasing the population and causing more wolves, and at the same time, it's not an effective way of managing wolves for the sake of protecting livestock, because if a wolf or a pack of wolves come in to cattle or to sheep, and they do take a couple and they predate on them. One of the common methods is to go out and remove the alpha pair from that pack to disrupt that pack so they do not learn that behavior anymore. And packs do learn that. It's a part of a behavioral part of their hunting and training. So when you remove that, you do stop that. Now, however, it could increase because now there's a need to feed these animals. They don't have the pack to be able to provide anymore, so now they have to go out and find the easiest meal possible. So it actually has a tendency to increase depredation on cattle and sheep, which doesn't always work well for the rancher. And the science shows that is happening. There's a lot of good research in Europe that suggests that it is in fact detrimental to the cattle and livestock herds to take wolves out of the picture that way. So it's kind of it's a very intricate web there. So when you feel that wolves just be, they're going to naturally tend to go towards their natural prey base. So that, I think, is the best way to manage wolves, is to let them be. And in occasional situations, the take of a wolf is probably warranted and should be occurring, But in the scale of what we would like to see from a perspective of the majority of people that live in the cattle and ranching industries would like to see, probably would not be very effective.
Well, that's very interesting, especially when you consider the science behind wolf management that has come out of studies in Europe and the United States that back up this position that it is less effective to cull wolves to prevent livestock loss. Do you think that the general public is aware of these issues and that it can make a difference?
I think the general public has an invested interest in a lot of the issues surrounding wildlife. But I would probably venture to say that the general public probably doesn't have a true understanding of what really is taking place. Most people love wildlife. They love to get out in nature. They love to see deer. They love to see the predators when they're from a distance in Yellowstone, for example. And they love to see the birds in their back porch. But a lot of people don't have perhaps the time to invest into looking into all these issues and to really understanding them deeply and fully. So consequently, when someone comes up with false information and they make a really big deal about it, they have the tendency to sway the public to believe that. And people aren't going to go and look it up for themselves. They're going to just take their word for it. And you see that happen all of the time. And it happens also for people trying to promote wildlife. They take in inaccurate facts as well. So I think, you know, in general, the public, they have a basic grasp of what's going on, but they don't have a deep underlying understanding. But I think that's a great opportunity for us to take that to them and really, you know, show and bring out awareness and really work hard to make it more understandable for people.
Well, hopefully with programs like ours here at Radio Wild, we can make a difference for wildlife and nature. It's such an important issue that I feel strongly about. We need to look into more ways of reaching the general public on these issues so that we have a better educated tomorrow, especially our wildlife managers of tomorrow. Do you think if things continue the way they are now, that we'll see an imbalance in nature?
If we don't get management right for managing wildlife, I think there's the potential to see an imbalance in nature or an imbalance in the way that we look at wildlife and that we perceive wildlife. And both, I think, can be detrimental to the health of our planet, to the health of society. We currently try our best to manage wildlife off of the best available science. Sometimes that's not always the case. But there's always instances where, you know, we don't know everything about nature. And so we're managing to the best of our ability, which is what we were doing back in the late 1800s or the 1900s when we had this extreme, huge predator control campaign that went across the country, and we killed, you know, millions of different types of species across the planet: bison, deer, pronghorn, elk, grizzly bears, wolves, of course. All these species were pushed to the very brink of extinction, and that was considered wildlife management back then. But the concept of wildlife management has changed, and is it going to change again in the future? And that's to be determined.
How do you view the future for wildlife and predators specifically?
Looking towards the future, I'm very hopeful and very optimistic about the future for wildlife, for the future for specifically predators. When you look at wolves and how they've returned to the landscape, specifically in the Northern Rockies population, they've rebounded very well up there. Wolves still have a long ways to go yet to reach their full recovery, considering they used to once inhabit entire North America. And they only occupy a small percentage of that historic home range right now. But I'm very optimistic about it. I think the perception is changing slowly, and I think it's going to continue changing. And eventually wolves are going to start migrating. They already are into areas that they haven't been in for, you know, a good 40, 50, 60 years. You're going to see other animals and other species starting to do the same thing, such as grizzly bears. They're starting to work on reintroducing the grizzly bear back into the North Cascades. And that's going to allow grizzly bears to reoccupy areas that they once inhabited. Cougars are starting to appear on the East Coast, specifically in the northern parts of the East Coast where they have thought them to be extinct. And it's just remarkable. When you let wildlife alone and let it do its thing, it comes back and bounces back in a remarkable way. So as long as we let wildlife be wildlife, there's a bright future for them ahead.
I like what you said there, that as long as wildlife is let alone to itself, it bounces back in a remarkable way. What does this mean for nature and for wildlife?
wildlife has a very uncanny way of being able to bounce back from probably very, very unlikely odds when you look at it. Looking at wolves in Yellowstone, only releasing a handful, and they just exploded from the Yellowstone region. Very, very, very well managed and allowed to just continually increase their numbers. You see that in a lot of different predator species. And I think it's because they have this instinct to survive. They have this way of eking out a living in the most and harshest environments, areas where if you were to go live out in the wilderness, how hard would that be for you to survive? And these animals do that for a living, and they do it very well. And I believe if wildlife left to itself, they can manage themselves perfectly. They'll be able to rebound extremely quickly and extremely fast. And it's really remarkable to see how quickly it can occur.
Does this mean that people will have to relearn how to think with regards to wildlife and wildlife management?
I think people are definitely going to have to rethink the way that we view wildlife and the way that it's returning to the landscape. We're used to the landscape the way it is right now, without predators, without different species of wildlife inhabiting it the way it used to. And as these predators start returning to the landscapes, people are going to start facing them and having to live with them. So there's going to have to be a change in the way that they think. For example, if grizzly bears do start returning to the North Cascades in this region, eventually start working their way down the Cascades, I've always been a little bit nervous around grizzly bears, but I'm going to have to do some research on my own and look into it and think, how am I going to be able to go camping and learn to understand these species? And then be able to, when I go out there, if I do encounter it, to know what to do and to be able to not be afraid and actually know, hey, this is a bear. My chances of being attacked are extremely slim. So enjoy it.
What does this mean for our ecosystem if predators are allowed to recover?
Predators have a very important role in the whole entire biodiversity of life. And so when predators are coming back in these numbers that we're going to start seeing over the next several years, we're going to see our ecosystems recovering. We're going to see the biodiversity returning in ways. I mean, we think we have a very gorgeous place, and you look here and it's extremely pretty. But if we were to see this in a few years when wolves are back, when grizzly bears have returned, this whole place is going to be transformed. It's going to be extremely, extremely healthy.
Okay, last question. Does this mean we have to come up with a new way to manage wildlife? Or do we simply change the way we do it or the technique in managing specific species?
I think when you look at the way we manage wildlife, the way that we work and we try to figure out ways to coexist and to cope with them, I think there's going to be a lot of new techniques that are going to be coming up over the next several years and moving into the future for sure that's going to transform the way we work with wildlife, the way we understand them. And I think that bright people rise up and they say, hey, let's look at this issue, let's try to address it. There's going to be a lot of really great tools coming up in the future, and I hope that they're based in science. So I think there's going to be a lot of great resources and a lot of great tools that are going to be coming in the future as people learn new aspects about wildlife and learn how to cope and to live with them in different ways or different techniques that could work to help mitigate between ranching and predators. And I think these things are going to really, really start working for us in the future. But I think it also requires us to have that discussion to be able to move forward and to be able to look at ways to live and to look at ways in order to create these tools so that wildlife and people can coexist.
Well, thank you, Alan, for taking the time to talk with your other half this morning. It has been quite a fun little discussion asking myself these questions and then listening to my responses. It was very informative, and I hope you as listeners were able to learn something from my dual personality here. But in all seriousness, folks, we need to lead the discussion about wildlife, wild places, and their future. If we don't, we will be living in a vastly different world. We need to find ways, solutions, answers to not just coping with, but rather thriving with wildlife and nature. Well, that just about sums up the show for you today. Thank you for listening to another fascinating episode of Radio Wild. Tune in next month as we continue our series of The Great Predator Debate, a call to action as we explore some of the most compelling issues our country faces with wildlife and nature. Today's episode is also brought to you in part by the Wild Artists Guild, celebrating the natural history of the Pacific Northwest's beauty through the various forms of art, media, and photography. Make sure to check out our WAG Talks on the first evening of every month on a Monday at the Madrona Hill Cafe on 5937 North Greeley Ave in Portland, Oregon at 7:30 p.m. Tonight's WAG Talk will be presented by Soul River's Chad Brown. Can nature heal us? We think so. Most of us know people who are working to overcome trauma in their lives. WAG's upcoming WAG Talk features Chad Brown, who will share his experiences that led him to found Soul River Incorporated, Runs Wild in Portland, Oregon. We'll be talking to Chad about how WERC can partner in the important work of reaching youth and veterans alike in a program we're calling Wild Warriors. Come learn about it. Join us on the first Monday of every month with Wild Artists Guild's discussion about art, wildlife, and more. Well, that just about does it, folks. Be sure to tune in on the first Monday of August, which happens to be August 3rd. You don't want to miss it, and also be sure to come out tonight to our WAG Talk, as well as the first Monday evening of every month to all the other WAG Talks coming in the future. Until then, remember to get out and enjoy nature. Have a great one, happy 4th, and adios.